You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple app or Google Play stores.
The Rake is a cryptid, feared for the emotional impact it has on its victims. From the cases I have read, the Rake is related to the Crawler and the Fleshgate. All are pale humanoids whose primal method of locomotion is crawling. While the Crawler and Fleshgate seek flesh to consume, the Rake does not appear to. Feeding off of the negative emotions it can force from others was the main theory of its diet. The various autopsy reports indicate otherwise. Case file. Rake, civilian. Number 08364. In the western United States, near 3 designated Skinwalker territories and 7 suspected Bigfoot domains, a Rake cryptid maneuvered its way into a small commune. It was a commune of 4 adults and 5 children. The point of this commune was the return to nature ideology. No cell phones, except for an emergency satellite phone. Due to this, most of the information is from the victims themselves. Journals and scribbled notes. That, and the words the satellite phone was able to record. The commune was self-sufficient. The runners, as the people in charge dubbed themselves as they were running the commune, were not the first people to notice the presence of the Rake. Like a horror movie cliché, it was the youngest, a 4-year-old male. His journal had the word Rake randomly dispersed in the writing for 2 weeks. The more alarming journal post was when the boy mentioned his scary friend, the Rake, wanted to be let in. So, the boy let his scary friend in. This could have been dismissed as fake, but the eldest daughter wrote an evil thing was sitting on the end of her bed, watching her with hollow eyes. Every so often, it would breathe. After what felt like hours, it left, and one word appeared in her mind. Rake. This repeated for 4 days. But with each successful night, the Rake would pour nihilistic thoughts into the eldest daughter. Depression was swift. Journal entries from the parents noted that their eldest daughter was withdrawn and would only mention one thing. The Rake is here for us all. The youngest would exclaim that the Rake was a friend, but when pressed into revealing his friend, the boy would mumble that it is shy. The eldest son, believing his younger sibling, decided to hunt for the Rake. The uncle of the commune accompanied the eldest son. Their bodies wouldn't be recovered until the secondary investigation. Subsequent journal entries indicated that the voices of the 2 would-be hunters could be heard. But the youngest would block the door and say his scary friend was teasing the commune. When pressed for details, the youngest boy described his scary friend and how he would make him and his eldest sister think thoughts of death. The rest of the commune tried to convince the boy, except for the remaining sibling. She would show the sketches she had been drawing for months, sketches of a pale individual with very long black claws, voids for eyes, gazing directly at the viewer with an intensity that should be impossible. The last journal entries of the commune, except for the youngest,
expressed private concerns, as they all had those feelings of nihilism and of the inevitability of the rake. The youngest boy's last written words were, "I'm sorry." Autopsy 1. Eldest boy. Slashing marks to the calf muscles, cleaving the muscles in two. Presence of adrenaline in the system indicates that he was in a state of fight or flight. Femoral artery was pierced cleanly. Death was slow due to smaller puncture wounds on the femoral artery. Autopsy 2. Uncle. Deep lacerations to the chest. Wounds to the arm indicate defensive wounds. Autopsy 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8. Mother, father, middle child, boy, youngest son, eldest daughter, aunt. All found dead. Sitting at the dining table. Postmortem evidence indicates the bodies were moved after death. Every person sitting at the table showed no outward signs of death. However, when the brain was examined, multiple scars were found throughout the brain. All the scars were arched, as if in repeated bite marks. Missing child. Youngest daughter. Evidence strongly implicates the daughter as the one who moved the bodies of the family to the inside of the commune dining area. Her fingerprints matched six pictures placed in front of the appropriate victim on the table. Footsteps of the youngest led out of the commune and disappear alongside the tracks of the rake. Rake information. The rake is an entity that feeds on induced nihilistic thoughts. People who are naturally nihilistic are immune to the enhancing effects that the rake naturally emits. This is thought to be an extension of the crawler's fear aura. The rake is a humanoid creature that moves on all fours like an animal. Long claws are seen from the forelegs. However, the evidence indicates that the length is a gouge. While the rake does have claws, as evidenced by the hundreds of bodies it has attacked, the length is quite short. But the length is likely to allow the rake to deduce how much nihilism or basic fear that the would-be victim produces. Due to the inherent nature of the rake, firearms have an indeterminable effect, as people are either too scared or nihilistic to make the attempt. The rake, due to its feeding capabilities, will, when it finds a suitable host, torment the victim with night visits and the aforementioned aura of nihilism. There is a theory that the youngest daughter was taken not for food, but to make another rake. While this is wholly speculation, it is the best theory that is agreed upon by the majority of the morticians. As you can imagine, there were a lot of cases I had to sort through. After reading about that nihilism aura that the rake apparently projects, I must admit I do ponder what would happen if I ever encountered this cryptid, or its variations. Also, finding out if these things can be killed would be helpful knowledge. I do apologize for the lateness of this case, but there were interruptions that required greater attention than normal. Werewolves, or the more encompassing term, therianthropes. Unlike the deplorable representation in the crimes against literature referred to as the Twilight Saga, or as I refer to it, why I am glad I have no emotional connections to people. From the vocal interjections, teen wolf would be a far greater viewpoint. Apparently, therianthropes are more like guardians than monsters. Some therianthropes can have their minds twisted by their capabilities. Therianthropes refers to the ability to turn into an animal through unknown means. Werewolves are the most acknowledged example of this. But apparently, any strong enough connection to a spirit animal and training that differs from person to person, you can actually gain the ability to shapeshift. This shapeshift is to a hybrid form of human and animal, but very rare therianthropes can shift completely into the animal form, though these are more rare than an honest used car salesman. Before I continue, I will point out that the morticians that granted me permission have asked that I only archive certain cases involving therianthropes and any victims. But they would rather this be more educational than threatening. I was able to point out that an example of a therianthrope who went blood mad, as they termed it, would be useful. They were not happy, but after several hours of heated discussion, they relented, grudgingly. But only if I went into great detail about therianthropy and the differences to cryptids like skinwalkers. Like previously mentioned, therianthropy, or shifting, is different to the few other forms that other cryptids are able to replicate. The closest example is the skinwalker. However, due to the secrecy of Native American shamanistic rituals, we are unable to examine the ritual. And given the levels of stupidity and curiosity people can demonstrate, I wouldn't post the information anyway, even if I did possess it. For therianthropy, the training stages allows the shifter to adapt to things like skin of an animal, the muscles and speed, but the most tricky aspect is the mentality. Physical changes can be eased into to allow greater control. But the mental changes are the part where shifters can turn feral if the human mind doesn't gain dominance. One of these cases would be used as an example below. However, those who do not make the shift successfully, they elect to use their powers to hunt the more dangerous cryptids and play guard duty for the bigger dangers. Though, while these Therians were effective in cryptid combat, they couldn't fight them all. The rake has an especially destabilizing effect on therianthropes. The skinwalker trigger a truly heightened fight-or-flight response. The fight would be to the death, typically the therian. The common therian forms are wolf, horse, boar, and bear. There are others, but I am asked to mention them only in the relevant case files. The case file I have chosen and have to defend my choice for, is one involving the last true werewolf. I have been asked to omit any dates, as there are still hunters out there who are thralling sites like this, looking for clues to the Therian threat. They are obsessed with killing Therians.
Case file. Werewolf. Therian. Number 001. Final.
Journals and maps indicate the location of where the last true werewolf was eventually killed. The language is not English, but something I was able to get translated. Again, the language is not something I am allowed to disclose.
We have been hunting him for the past 6 weeks. His aggressive nature is causing his trail to be easy. But we are patient. We know he is the last. The Inquisition, the Shadow One, has killed many werewolves and eliminated most of the more insidious vampires. But this lichen has proved to be a cunning predator. Almost apex. He has avoided the small hamlets in the area. He must be hungry. This makes him even more dangerous. A predator that is hunted, hungry, and desperate. I do not expect any of us to live through this hunt, but his death is required. Therian 2 has informed us that we have found a lair. Tracks and recent kills indicate that it could be the lichens. We spread out and attune our senses to sharpen. There are 5 other Therians, including myself. Therian 4 is a bear shifter. She is looking at the mouth of the lair with an odd expression. Human, the Therian whispered. All our eyes snap at each other. This changes things. A hostage or a snack. Unless we move, the human is dead. As the hunt leader, I walk into the clearing. I am a wolf shifter. There are 2 boar shifters, the bear shifter, and a horse shifter. The others follow me into the small clearing. The Boers were twins. They nod at me. We know our roles. The Boers were to play bait. The horse shifter was a trained healer. The bear shifter is the main powerhouse. As a wolf, I have inherent understanding of team leadership. I howl, reaching that primal aspect, issuing a challenge. The others scatter to their positions. I stand in front of the lair mouth. A growl that seems to shake the entire forest ripples from the lair. It stalked out with restrained strength. I charged at it, and I knew the response. It charged at me. The lichen leaped at me, but I slid along the ground as the boars charged in together. Their tusks barely broke its skin.
From this point, the riding would change in style. The language was the same, but the riding is much shakier.
It was apex. A lichen reached the pinnacle. We won't survive this fight. The bear charged in with a roar like a volcano. The blows seemed to shake the very air around us all. The leader started darting in and out, snapping at hamstrings and other weak points. The boars started to mirror their attacks, aiming for the same spots on the opposite side. The fight was the most brutal I'd ever seen. The lichen's claws easily ripped through our flesh. The bear was greatly wounded, and the hunt leader was missing his throat, still clutched in the lichen's right hand. The surviving boar was being held up in their left hand, and its kicks were getting weaker. I move and strike. My kicks are powerful. I reach out with a kick and slam into its throat. I can feel the wind box collapse beneath my hoof. He throws the boar away. A loud crack answers the question I dreaded. I start to dart aside, but with his last few breaths, he managed to slash against my stomach. Then, he collapsed. I took the book from the leader, and have documented the final fights. I am dying, but this needs to be recorded. I'm going to ask the human who is staring at us. Get him to hand this journal into a sage. We fought well.
I remember reading somewhere that the rate that herd animals are killed by predators in Africa is the same rate as the number of people who just completely disappear. Some of these are fodder for the dark web and the like. But what about the people who don't just disappear, but are known to die through tragic happenstance? Malaysia Airlines Flight 370 and other similar events. The Titanic is another one, and the dreaded Bermuda Triangle. As I implied, I did spot some of the missing in the dark web, but what happens to the larger groups of people who died? Their bodies are most unrecoverable. There is a bit more to their death, judging by the records I have seen. Dragons are real, but since they cannot be controlled or weaponized by conventional means, placation seems to be the one-hand tactic for dealing with them. While there are not many in the world, as those details have been scrubbed from many specific mention, and given the complete radio silence from Russia and China, we would be unable to provide an exact number anyway. Every so often, a large group of people vanish tragically. Flight 370 is a fairly public and recent event, similar to what is described. 239 people, or as they have become viewed as portions of a meal. Every so often, a group of over 150 people would disappear, presumed to be dead. They are divvied up and prepared per the dragon's requirements. If the cooks are able to preserve some part of the body, it would be the only piece found for closure of the bereaved families. This has been going on for a while, decades at least. As time goes on, the number of people that need to disappear increases, or the frequency in which groups vanish. I am well aware of how this sounds, and then I thought about it, especially for modern times, specifically mobile phones. Ever wonder why you are asked to turn them off when you are on flights? They say it is so it doesn't mess with the instruments, but if I'm going to design an interconnected system to stay in control of an airborne vehicle that can be measured in the number of elephants, I would make sure that there is no way that the mobile home network, in absolutely no way, interferes with my systems. We have all seen the signal strength indicators on those devices. Why can't we just actively track mobile phones by signal strength? It obviously makes a connection with the tower or network, so it is plausible. All they would need, in theory, is to search for those missing phones along the network and use that to triangulate the location of a majority of them. Sure, water damage could affect it, but they still had a connection before the damage. All it would take is the records of these events to narrow it down. In any case, I know you are here for more than my observations. There is a journal of a dragon discoverer, and the autopsy of said discoverer as well.
Case file. Dragon. Number 013. I have been traveling through the jungle for weeks now. I am reasonably certain that I am lost. However, I am not new to these expeditions and pay attention to the surroundings. I have also been here before, so I have that as an advantage. I heard a noise last night. Something is stalking me through this jungle. I'm going to set up my tent and write more once I have a clue of what is going on. Several days have passed, with rough distance traveled in the direction. I had never experienced silence like this. The only sound I can hear is the scratching of pen on paper. I can barely hear myself breathe. When writers describe a sense of dread blanketing the area being described, I now fully appreciate and hate it. I can't focus. I should be 2 days away from the cave system I am looking for, though when I think about it, I really don't want to go.
2 more days with notes pass.
It hasn't killed me, but I don't know how much longer I can keep it entertained. I know the source of dread now, and seeing it, I almost wish for the soul-crushing emotion. Dragons are real. I'm staring at one right now. Dark scales cover this glorious monster, at least 40 feet long. It just lies there, bones all about. When I entered the cave, I didn't even see it until it blocked the passage when I went to leave. When it speaks to me, it is excruciating, not in volume, just the raw power of its voice. He says I am its first visitor in a long while. It spoke to me for hours. I'm not sure. My bones are still aching. For all I know, it could be minutes, but the pain is excruciating. And I have been bitten by a bullet ant.
Several sketches of the dragon are seen in the journal.
I hear movements from the cave mouth. The dragon is awake and smiling. It is the most horrifying smile I have seen. A large metal cage filled with corpses gets pushed in.
The journal ends there. Apparently, the morticians are part of a larger shadow community. It is through another aspect of the community that the journal was passed on. Curiously, it was not destroyed. When I asked the morticians why it wasn't destroyed, they reminded me that it is plausible to follow the man's path. There is an autopsy file of the explorer. Autopsy, male, late 30s. Bone structure is riddled with microfractures. Skeletal structure was compromised. Cause of death was a morphine overdose, administered while Explorer was asleep. Apparently, dragons can cause microfractures to normal humans due to the intensity of their power. But the humans with the LRP5 mutation with gain of function are able to resist the damage. However, since the known LRP5 mutations are of interest to the scientific community, the LRP5 ones who are not tracked are encouraged to assist the shadow community. As a side note, an agent who wishes to speak with me has been knocking on my door for the past hour. I will speak with her momentarily. I will update you depending on how the conversation progresses. Apologies for the delayed update, but the conversation with the agent I previously mentioned has consequences that demanded an immediate response. While a certain government has been keeping abreast of my updates, they approached me solely due to my history. Specifically, Case 1. The base where I had last deployed to had been operating smoothly. Too smoothly for anything having to deal with the government or military bureaucracy. They asked, as gently as any secretive government agency concerned about the integrity of a military base on U.S. soil, for me to accompany them on a base visit. We left immediately. The ride to the base was tense, judging by the very slight shifting of the three agents I was accompanying. We got to a cheap motel an hour's drive from the base and booked in for the night. While I was handed a uniform to change into, I pondered over some of the cases I had read and not archived yet when an epiphany occurred. What if the morticians and whoever else pondered about the cryptids were wrong about the relationship between the rake, the fleshgate, and the crawler? What if they weren't offshoots, but aggressive scouts? I am unsure for whom they are scouting, but this is just an alternate perspective based on the facts. The rake and the fleshgate are reported to have some influence over the human mind. The rake is more psyops, and the fleshgate is more focused on infiltration tactics. The crawler would be a shock troop, focusing on the aspects of fear when people notice the true inhuman speeds they can actually exhibit. Taking this perspective into a real-world situation, the best way to know how to use your scouts effectively is to test them against people who are less observant, to see who the scouts and their targets will react to. Remember, we are not dealing with humans spying on humans, but monsters spying on humans. Who would believe you if you say that you saw a monster watching you? You would be teased or ignored. Only the people who have also witnessed these monsters would believe you. And as a group, you would be disregarded or mocked. So, looking at the premise of this being regarded as a joke, let's push forward and go for execution. How would these invaders do just that? They could go for a small civilian population. With the inherent capabilities they possess, they could, if they were methodical, take over very swiftly and easily. But all it would tell them is what they would already know. They can cause fear, paranoia, or despondency. But what about military personnel? Not the elite special forces, but the bread and butter of the armed forces. A small base of little consequence in the grand scheme of situations. A good testing ground. A petri dish of sorts. Like the base I was deployed to for my promotion examinations. If this agency wanted to grab me, I doubt I could stop them if they rushed me. Them wanting a dialogue that then progressed to out their current situation could indicate that this totally insane theory had some basis. Looking over the uniform, I remember that event, and the decisions I made, and something struck me as unusual. There isn't supposed to be a Wendigo that close to the base. It ranged almost 80 miles farther away. Something is up. and I think this situation almost certainly ties in. An hour after I settled down into my room, the primary agent entered my room. The look on his face was an expression of concern. While I pressed for details, she mentioned that her team was acting strangely, like they were waiting for prompts in conversation. She asked to stay in the same room, as she didn't trust the three agents in the other room. With my knowledge of the units I was traveling with, I agreed. I volunteered to sleep on the couch. Naturally, I wasn't stupid to actually fall asleep. I came up with three agents, the one in charge and her two subordinates. We never met any additional staff. I had a plan and needed to work carefully. Since I was suspecting a mass infiltration of Fleshgate, I focused on the thoughts of returning to the base. And only those thoughts. The night was long, but all five of us packed into the SUV and drove the rest of the way to the base. As we were let in, I noticed the guards watched me intensely. Stepping out of the vehicle and walking around, we noticed that all of them were staring at me. Until it was noticed by us. The layout hadn't changed, and I was asked how I wished to proceed. The agent in charge decided to speak with the base commander. I sat in on the meeting. The base commander seemed to be in control, but there were small details that I kept noticing. Odd twitches, overlong glances, shifting uncomfortably. They were small, but I could see them. They offered a tour of the grounds, which was accepted by the agents, but I declined. When asked, I reminded them that I had already attended this base in the past, but would like to visit the spot of my old shame. An escort was offered, and I took the opportunity. During my time at the base, I had paid attention to natural caves or overhangs in the area, should I somehow not make it back in time during an overlong excursion. While I'm not sure how Wendigo and Fleshgates would interact, I had a flash of inspiration. My escort was a four-man squad who were behaving well, except for the sidelong glances I would catch. As we got closer to the site of the incident, their pacing shifted slightly. They were getting ready to jump me. I tackled the soldier to the side, grabbing his combat knife while we ran. The other three opened fire. Fortunately, by the time they started firing and the time I tackled their fourth, was enough for me to get behind a tree. The knife went into the throat of the Fleshgate, stripping his weapons off of his body. I counterattacked and was able to eliminate the three remaining Fleshgates. Fleshgates bleed an off-pink color, and the consistency is thicker than blood. I removed from them their weaponry and some MREs, just in case. I looked around, trying to get my bearings, and I headed away from the base. It took me half an hour to find what I suspected. A dead Wendigo. I grabbed some poisonous mushrooms and took them closer to the base. I couldn't fight everyone there with standard weapons. They could scatter too easily. But we all needed to eat, and hopefully they are susceptible to poison. And as you can likely ascertain, they were. I will write up the details of the rest of the encounter, and how the truth was kept hidden from the government, plus the various autopsies that would be conducted. I also met a retired mortician. Sorry for the delay. This has been a difficult case file to finish writing up, mainly due to the repercussions of my actions. Like I previously mentioned, I was suspicious regarding the personnel of the base, and given what I found in the forest, I took precautions. Knowing the poisonous herbs and mushrooms in the area, I took a significant amount. The base personnel amount is wrong. There are likely to be more discrepancies, and I knew that one of those agents is likely to be another Fleshgate. I have the tools to do what is required, but deployments will be difficult. I needed to affect as many people as I can, including the agents. I am the only person I know is not affected. I got little sleep, and not that any reasonable individual would in this situation. Knowing some protocols, I was able to use the natural poisonous substances to infect the food and cooking utensils. Hours later, the infiltrators started to succumb to the poison. I figured that it would be likely that I would be identified as the culprit. Fortunately, when I was based here, I would plot how I would assault this base. Positions to use for choke points, places to hide myself or supplies. While the army personnel do not carry normally, the agents would be required to arm themselves. The agent who brought me here figured me out. I acted, slamming her against the wall with my hand over her mouth, and fought her for her weapons. Two discharges went wild during the struggle, and I was able to gather control. One to the guy, one to the head. Blood poured from the wounds. I grabbed her spare clip and her cell phone. Tossing the cell phone to the side once I left the building, I went on the assault. It took me 2 hours to kill everyone. I received a total of 5 gunshots. Ignoring the pain, I noticed that not all bodies bled red. About 65% of the bodies seemed to slightly deflate upon death, and the liquid that leaked was not red, but a light pink color. It also didn't look like blood. The consistency was slightly thicker, almost like mustard. While I was searching the commander's office, who was a flesh gate, I created a throwaway email account and emailed a mortician contact. I sent them the direct dial number for the office only. 8 seconds later, the phone rang. I told them about the Fleshgate infiltration into this base. I explained my actions to them, and they advised they would send a retired mortician to attend the site. While they never dealt with autopsies anymore, they stayed within the organization. I waited. Part of me wanted to move the bodies to make corpse retrieval easier, but the practical side of me said that they would likely be upset with me disturbing the evidence. Sitting in the commander's office, the wait was long. I wanted to focus on how to identify flesh gates, but it would require resources I do not have access to. And I also had no major inclination to look too deeply into it. I appreciated my archivist duties. While being active would be appreciated, I would rather just archive. The retired mortician arrived in a large truck. 3 people piled out in the back. I met them at the gate. As they approached on foot, I pulled out a knife. I explained that some of the corpses were flesh gates and bled a different color. I cut myself slightly and bled. The others complied with a request and showed the same color. I was mentally projecting an off-green color, but it seems these were humans. I walked the mortician through the assault on the base, and I explained about the cryptid corpse in the woods. The retired mortician thanked me for the detail when I spotted his name tag. I confirmed that this was the mortician that retired after a mush corpse. His face paled significantly at the mere mention of the incident. He politely advised that I do not mention that ever again. Pointedly would be a more apt way to describe it. The bodies were placed into the trunk, and we all piled in. The ride back was quiet. The one thing I did not share was the haunted look. Everyone here had a personal encounter with a cryptid. It took me a while to recover sufficiently from my injuries. While that transpired, the autopsies were conducted. Instead of doing a breakdown of each individual one, I will convey the pertinent details. Humans. Poisoned from the death cap mushrooms. Ingested. Likely cause of death. The ones who survived the initial poison were shot multiple times with a bullet to the head post-mortem. This actually caused some trouble for the attending morticians, as there seemed to be discrepancies in the parts of the brain governing memory and perception. The damage makes it hard to verify if all suffered the same level of inflammation, triggering what could be attributed to the false memories. Fleshgates. Humanoid with a similar skeletal structure made of hardened cartilage and an approximate falsimile of the human skeleton. Upon death, the cartilage softens, given the slightly deflated appearance as noted by the asset who eliminated the nest of infiltrators. The musculature also seems to have a more fluid quality, allowing the flesh gates to alter their forms to better reflect upon the false memories they impart. The brain has extra sections which are theorized to affect others, allowing false memories to allow for easier infiltration. Extra glands are filled with a pheromone which allow for weakening of the immune system, allowing the telepathic manipulations to occur more easily within victims. Wendigo. Cryptid. Elongated humanoid. Deterioration of the vocal cords and the speech part of the brain indicates that the natural vocabulary is greatly diminished. The state of this part of the brain is equivalent to that of a baby learning to speak. Copying sounds heard with no understanding of context. The skin was thickened to deal with the lower temperatures they are readily exposed to, which also helps act as a natural form of body armor. The musculature is approximately 8 times greater than a human's, which also helps with body toughness. Claws are hardened nails to levels thought impossible. The Wendigo was beaten to death, which, given the resilience this particular specimen demonstrated, speaks greatly of the effectiveness of flesh gates. This is the 3rd infiltration attempt in the past 60 years.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RiteRug.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring. Right Rug.